outfield, the 1-1. Higher, fly ball, the opposite way to right. Wilson was playing in. It's over his head and off the wall. Valera motors around third base. And that's it. The Loons walk it off. Higher mobbed in short center field.
Hello and welcome to the Hot Corner Podcast. I'm Jason Laplow. It's been a while since I pushed out an episode of the Hot Corner, and it's not that it's gotten behind me or anything. It's mostly just that I kind of made the decision that I want each episode to be quality, and I don't want to have to push out every one every month just because I have to. You know, it's my thing. I created this thing, and I kind of decided that I don't want, you know, not to say that any of the ones that I have are bad. I think they're great, but I think there's more out there that I can approach. So step one of that, obviously, was talking to Mr. Frank Altimore last episode. We had some really good conversation. That's somebody you really wouldn't expect to be on the podcast, so that got me thinking. And for 2020, I decided I'm going to try and get some good guests on the podcast, and I don't know how many episodes I'll come out with, but I hope to guarantee that each one will be a good listen and something that you don't regret wasting your time listening to. So for step two of this project, I've decided to email Mr. Brad Tunney, the ESPN 100.9 FM play-by-play announcer, who's the voice of the Great Lakes Loons, as well as local high school sports in the area. And he agreed to be on my podcast. I was kind of surprised. And so I went and sat down with him, and we had a great conversation about his career. And I'm very excited for you guys to listen to this. So without further ado, here it is.
So just give me a brief rundown of how you got to where you are today, like where you grew up, went to high school, how you got this job.
I'm from Metro Detroit area, Clinton Township, St. Clair Shores area, and went to Lancers High School. One of the reasons why I am here today is because our high school had a broadcasting program, so we'd had an in-house TV circuit where we had the full thing. It was a news station. We did a weekly news show called Cruise Control, and there were sports reporting and news reporting and anchoring and all that stuff, a full TriCaster system for directing and replays and everything. So not only did we do the news show once a week, but then all of our sporting events in the gym were on TV, so volleyball and basketball, and they needed commentators or, you know, positions in the club. So we had camera people in the club. It was a broadcasting club that I got involved with when I was a freshman. Worked through that at Lancers High School. Decided when I was a sophomore that Central Michigan's got a good broadcasting program. I'm only going to apply there. I'm going to go there. I want to do play-by-play at Central Michigan. So got into there, went there, spent 3.5 years there. And after about a year, I was doing the student stuff there, volleyball, women's basketball, and baseball, and softball, which is what they offer students for announcing. Was doing that. There were some needs at this radio station. Their full-time people had been moving on, and they, out of desperation, out of stupidity, whatever it was, put 19-year-old college students on the air on a commercial radio station. So there were three of us that started here. I was the youngest. I was a sophomore. There was also a senior and then a junior. And they allowed us to do all their high school basketball games because they had no one else to do them. I ended up sticking around the longest. They liked my work, so I came back the following year as like a part-timer and then just kept hanging around. I ended up advancing in school fast enough because I saw the path that I was on to graduate early. So I graduated early to get ready for a full baseball season instead of graduating in May, mm-hmm. in which I would have missed a baseball season then. I graduated in December so I could be ready, and then they hired me here full-time in January, and I've been here now 3 full years.
Now, what exactly did you study at CMU?
Major was broadcast and cinematic arts. I did it obviously for the broadcasting side of it. Mm-hmm. Their degree is just cinematic arts tied right. too, so a lot of it was movie themed, but I didn't really care a whole lot about that. Small major, so I actually double minored in things that I thought would make me more well-rounded. One of them was business administration, and the other was media sales, which was a brand new minor at the time. I was the first one to graduate with that minor, which was really neat because it tied some broadcast classes in with sales, and I always found sales to just be kind of universal in the skills that you can acquire with something like that. So that was my degree.
I know that you do the loons, obviously. I've heard you on high school football, mm-hmm. high school basketball. What else do you do?
We do Northwood basketball locally, men's and women's basketball with Northwood. Their accompanying coaching shows for football and basketball. You mentioned the high school stuff. We've got the loons. That's what we do in-house. And then personally, I freelance with the Grand Rapids Drive, Pistons G League affiliate in Grand Rapids. So I do anywhere from a half dozen to a dozen of their home games a year.
So what does a typical day look like for you? Just, well, I'd say on-season and off-season for baseball.
Well, you nailed it because the days are completely different off-season and in-season. Time-wise, the off-season is one that is about managing my time because of how much time we invest in baseball season. Those are sometimes 80-hour weeks. So just managing the load in the off-season to make sure this doesn't become, you know, something that completely engulfs your life. But in the off-season, sticking to 30, 40 hours a week, coming in 9 to 5 primarily, unless there's a broadcast that night, to which I'll get in a little bit later, but kind of sticking to 8 hours a day. And during the off-season, a majority of my work is done with the rest of what my job description is, which is programming the station, kind of managing the day-to-day, managing all of our hourly employees, coming up with best practices for how to increase revenue and things like that, dealing with affiliate reps, so our relationships with the Pistons and our relationships with Michigan State and Saginaw Valley League and Northwood and all that stuff. And then during the baseball season, 7 o'clock game, I'll come in at noon. Takes me about an hour to do our game notes for each day. Those are done daily in preparation for the game. I like to have about an hour to fill out my lineup card. So that's the 2 hours, about an hour spent down at the clubhouse and batting cages, kind of gathering stories. That leaves me with another about 3 hours, about an hour just to breathe and eat before the game. And then some of that time is spent picking up other little, you know, just daily programming needs of the radio station, kind of the day-to-day stuff. Kind of takes a back burner to the baseball stuff during the season, but it's all still necessary.
So did you always feel like you would be a broadcaster, or at what point did you realize you wanted to become a broadcaster?
I always draw this story back to the 04 Pistons.
Okay.
We had season tickets when I was a kid to the Pistons when they were at the Palace. And we got season tickets the year after they won the championship. The first Pistons game I ever went to, that I can remember at least, was first-round playoff series during the 04 championship run. We went as just a one-off playoff game. Ended up obviously seeing them win the championship. Became a huge fan of the Pistons, always was a huge fan of the Pistons. Had great ties to sports, played basketball growing up. So I would always, you know, announce myself in the driveway and all that little stuff, and announce video games with the sound off, and mm-hmm. all the normal stuff would-be broadcasters do. And then never really thought anything of it because of how kind of like, you know, you kind of put broadcasters in like this weird celebrity role, right? That they're not, it just doesn't seem like a real job. Mm-hmm. It still doesn't really seem like a real job, which is the good part about it. But then when I got to high school, I had no intentions of like finding a broadcasting route. I was an extremely smart kid coming in. I was in the advanced program at the high school. Mm-hmm. By the end of it, I didn't end up being as smart as I thought. But I started in the broadcast club because there was a senior at the time who I actually met at a high school football game and played pickup football with him during a Friday night football game, my first football game when I was a freshman. And just showed up, and he was like, "Hey, we've got a broadcasting club. You seem like you're interested in sports. You should come help us out." He was just trying to recruit because he needed more people in the club. He ended up being a broadcaster. I ended up getting into the club, started broadcasting my freshman year, and like, it's kind of the rest of it. When I was a freshman in high school, I kind of decided that that was the thing I was good at and the thing that seemed like I had a leg up on experience-wise, so I just continued with it.
All right, so a lot of the people that are going to listen to this are born right here in Midland, so how do you feel Midland as a community has had you, and just how do you feel like the Loons have a good impact on this community?
So I come from a much bigger city than this. Obviously Metro Detroit kind of sprawls into a bunch of different suburbs, and there's just always something at every corner, always something to do every night. Obviously there's food open past 10 p.m., which is a hurdle around here.
Yeah.
But when I moved here in 2017, and I'd been essentially living here since about 2014 because I was driving here every single day while I was at school in Mount Pleasant. But I when I really moved here in 2017, I thought, boy, is there going to be enough there to just fulfill hobbies and entertainment and just stuff to do outside of work? And I've truly fallen in love with the city, the downtown area, the way that it progresses constantly, the way that they try to add to this city. The community truly cares about all of its local sports in a way that is not like in a bigger city. Like we're in a metro area, they just don't care about high school sports the way that they do in smaller cities. And specifically in a city like Midland that is extremely fortunate to have two major high schools in it, to have true rivalry within the city limits. And not just rivalry, but respect for the other school on a constant basis and connections and relationships between the two. I think Midland is super, super fortunate in that way that they have minor league baseball. They have a USTA circuit tennis event that obviously we just had here at the Tennis Center with the Dow Tennis Classic. They have an LPGA event now. They have a lot of events that even bigger cities don't have. To see up-and-coming sports talent, whether that be high school, prep, there's a college, there's a university in town. Mm-hmm. So with all of that comes great opportunity for me, comes great opportunity for the radio station, and I think it's been really neat to become one with this community, and not just Midland, but with Bay City and Saginaw and the surrounding townships and even down to Flint.
What are some of your favorite memories since you've started here at the radio station, on the field or off?
Yeah. All the state championships we've done. So we've got a picture in the studio of the Heritage Hawks girls basketball team from 2 years ago. That was the first time they won the title. They had four college basketball players in their starting lineup. Three of them went Division I. The other one very well could have. She's playing Division II. And then they won it again, and I was a part of both of those state championships, and those were teams that we followed throughout the state tournament. So, like, getting to know their parents and their grandparents who were listening in Florida every night. Like, all of that is really neat. The Loons Championship in 2016, I wasn't a full-timer yet, but I was with them for every single game that year. And when they won that championship here and being on the air post-game, owning that post-game show as a 21-year-old at the time for a Midwest League championship and the first in franchise history was huge. And then the All-Star game that we hosted here a couple of years back when we had the Home Run Derby, I was an on-field host for that one, and we, in real time, hosted a Home Run Derby that saw Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Fernando Tatis Jr. and Bo Bichette and just all of these stars that are already in the major leagues, and Fernando Tatis, one of the better hitters in the bigs already. Mm-hmm. Like, looking back on that moment and hanging out with all of those guys in real time on this venue when it was pouring down rain and just the amount of people that were still here, I would point to those state championships and then the championship and the All-Star game for sure.
So I assume you travel a lot, and do you always enjoy it, or have you begun to dread it at a point?
I enjoy travel. I travel a lot on my own outside of work. So I love travel. I love new things, new experiences, new cities, new people. It's kind of, I guess, being part of being a broadcaster. Mm-hmm. You're a broadcaster because you're curious and you end up telling those stories on the air, but travel is the same way. So buses are extremely hard. I see a chiropractor because my back during the season becomes miserable, sleeping on a bus and some of those long trips. Bowling Green, Kentucky is our longest trip from here for the baseball season that we make twice a year, every year, no matter what, sometimes three times a year. And that's 8.5 hours. And 8.5 hours when sometimes we get on the bus at 5:30 at night and not get home until whenever in the morning is very tough, especially when we then play the next day at 7 p.m. So travel is hard because of the schedule. If we could travel and then have 3 days off, it wouldn't be that bad. But when you travel 8.5 hours through the night and then have to wake up 6 hours later to call a baseball for 3 hours, that's when the travel gets tough. But all of it's bus travel for us, Northwood and the Loons. Northwood has some longer trips, like to Houghton and Marquette in the UP. Those are like 6 hours. Travel is travel. I don't think it's something that anybody likes. Yeah. The bus trips, like those are pretty miserable, but it's all part of the it's all part of the destination and finding stuff to do along the way.
So how do you think it feels putting on the headset before a Loons game and getting ready to announce? Do you ever get nervous?
To be honest with you, some days are so busy that I sit down with the headset on and it's like, whew, like, thank goodness the baseball game is here. And yeah. And for me, I tend to have higher anxiety, not professionally, but just personally. And the broadcast booth has always just been a place that, like, all of that washes away. And when the headset goes on, it's just me and the game. Like, it's just the listeners and the game, whatever that game may be. And baseball in particular, because it's outdoors, because it's such a grand facility here, it's different than going to a high school basketball gym or even a pro gym with the Grand Rapids Drive. Like, it's an event every night, no matter if there's 800 people here or 6,000 people here. And it obviously changes the feeling of the game, but you put the headset on, you know you're locked in for 3 hours. Same way, I'm sure, like endurance runners, when they start a half marathon or something, like they're locking in and everything else is not a worry anymore. They're just, you're talking about baseball for 3 hours, which is really calming, actually. It's, I'm sure for some people, especially early in my career, I was very nervous. But now once you get comfortable and you start to do it so often, it becomes extremely calming, which is almost one of my favorite parts about it.
So I've heard a lot of stories about aspiring broadcasters, like especially in sports, reaching out to professional broadcasters. Like I know Matt Shepard for the Tigers sent a letter to Ernie Harwell when he was a kid. So did you ever do something to that effect? Or if a kid reached out to you or wrote a letter to you, what advice would you give them?
So a couple of parts to this. I did do this when I was a kid. Well, not as a kid, because I really didn't know that I wanted to be a broadcaster until I was in high school. But once I got to high school, I started to understand kind of the industry. And the industry is one that benefits, rewards people who are extremely outgoing. Mm-hmm. You have to be willing to send multiple emails. And in your case, you did. And so, like, for me, I started reaching out to broadcasters when I was in high school, and most of them were local college broadcasters, Oakland University, Central Michigan, whatever it may be. I never really reached out to major league guys or things like that. I probably should have at the time, because when you're in high school and when you're in college, you have to take advantage of that time, because once you leave college and you start to reach out to those people, are you seen as someone who's trying to take their job? It's super competitive. Mm-hmm. So you have a unique opportunity when you're in high school and college to take advantage of kind of your position in the world. But, I mean, the biggest part about progressing in this industry is contacts, is relationships. A lot of times people are getting jobs in this industry without job postings, which is frustrating for people that don't have networking as just a born skill. Mm-hmm. The best broadcasters I know are not the best broadcasters or the best networkers. The guys with the best jobs are not, they don't necessarily have the best voice or the best description in their call or the best vocabulary. They're truly just the ones that network the best. And I always point to Jared Sandler, who was formerly in this position at this station, who is now with the Texas Rangers. He immediately made the jump from this spot to the number three broadcaster on the radio with the Texas Rangers. And he went there because he's from Dallas and because he has great ties to the Dallas area, but he kept relationships with those people for years after he was a kid. And, that was a job that was never really posted. It was just, he was interning at the radio station that the flagship of the Rangers was, and he was in the door already. And because those guys liked him and he had formed great relationships over the years, he was there, and it was right place, right time. And that's nearly every job in this industry. Like, my job was never really posted when I got this position. It was, again, just me when I was 19, starting as a part-timer here and then never leaving. Mm-hmm. And growing along the way. So I've truly grown every year I've been here, the same way the station I ideally think has too. But it's just, reaching out to older broadcasters is the only way you can get, one, better, and two, progress in the industry. It's so very important.
So a lot of casual Loons fans come to the games and they don't really keep track. They don't follow the team, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, shuffling in and out, seasoning some minor league baseball team, local
right.
level, you know, kind of thing. So do you find it difficult to keep track of the team? Obviously, you're watching them every day, but...
Keeping track of the team is not hard. I mean, that's primarily my job, I guess, during the baseball season. I mean, I understand why fans leak in and out. I even understand why our front office members sometimes can't fully keep track of them,
mm-hmm.
especially with the Dodgers in particular, that make more player movements than just about any organization in baseball. They really, not abuse, because there's no real rule, but they truly abuse the player transactions that they have. Guys are up nearly every day at some point during the year with our team. So, not hard to keep track. It is tedious because every time a new guy is in, that means creating a new bio and learning about these guys and going down there and hearing their tendencies and their pitch styles and then watching them when I can to make sure down the road you identify things that maybe change so you can come up with questions for that reasoning. And so it's I mean, it's part of the job to keep up with that.
And what about like high school sports? How much in advance do you look at the roster and try to pronounce these guys' names?
Names for high school are always tricky because sometimes we don't even get rosters until we show up at the gym. So
yeah.
That's why we try to stick to the bigger schools and the schools that we know have resources to feed them to us. So it's nice having an affiliation with the Saginaw Valley League because all those schools are very reputable, very credible in the way that they operate. And but yeah, names in particular are something that you study before a game, and writing them multiple times or typing them multiple times helps. High school kids, obviously, there's not a lot of like information on them, nor do you want to go digging super deep onto a 17-year-old's Instagram page to find out what they enjoy doing or something like that. It's different when you're talking college athletes and pro athletes, but yeah, there's only so much you can do with high school. But the point is with a high school game is to just, one, get their names right when you show up to the gym, announce their names right because you know their parents are listening or will listen after the fact, and then, you know, tell the stories of the schools and just give the score. That's all, like, parents want or mm-hmm. fans of the schools want. They just want to know if their son or daughter or nephew or cousin or brother or best friend is doing well, and then what the score of the game is. So high school sports are really different than just about anything else you cover, where the deeper stories are super important.
So you mentioned earlier that you always put these broadcasters in kind of a celebrity kind of role.
Mm-hmm.
So do you feel like kind of a local celebrity?
Not really at all. Like I say that about guys like Joe Davis, the voice of the Dodgers, or Joe Buck,
right.
or Mike Tirico, or John Shambi with Sunday Night Baseball, like Adam Amin, like some of these guys that are truly national broadcasters. For me, like, this job is one of 140 in the country, which is still rare. Like, and that's why it's so tough to crack this industry, because there are a finite number of jobs. It's not like being an accountant or an insurance salesman where you could go find a job in any city and pick up and move whenever you want. This ties you to a city, which I also think deepens your passion for a city, because when I moved here, I knew I was locked in for a couple of years. There, like, I wasn't going to leave. So I certainly don't think it's a local celebrity, especially because I know, like, every TV sports reporter in the region, too, and are really close with them. And I'm sure most people watch the TV news at night and go, boy, those people seem like they're above a common, again, an accountant or something like that. But it's just, I don't really think that's the case. I mean, maybe that is the case, but
mm-hmm.
again, I'm just like 24 years old, just kind of calling high school basketball games in a small town that truly cares about high school sports. More of a service. I almost feel like the kids and the parents are more important than I am, because I'm just kind of doing a service to them anyway.
Mm-hmm. So about all those people you mentioned or someone else, do you look up to anybody higher up in the industry?
I think all those guys are inspirations, like Joe Davis in particular, not just because of how young he is when he got to the Dodgers, and he's an outstanding broadcaster too, but the fact that he has kids and a wife and following him enough, you know, he tends to give a lot of time to them and is somehow managing being a full-time baseball broadcaster and doing Fox Sports football and baseball and everything else,
yeah.
and really enjoying family life too, something that obviously as I get older that is a bigger concern and not just worry, but a point of emphasis. So that is an inspiration. Ernie Johnson, someone who's also extremely inspiring, not only because he does maybe the best, what I think is the best sports show on television, and he does it for a sport that I enjoy the most in basketball, and how inspiring he is with his, with also his kids. He has kids that are, I believe, autistic or have cerebral palsy, or, you know, they've adopted children. So that's super inspiring. John Shambi, I think, is the best baseball broadcaster I know on the radio. He's just really good. So I like watching him, and Joe Buck, because he takes a lot of heat, and I think he's as good as anybody in the country nationally.
For this next issue of our school newspaper, I'm writing a story on the recent MLB cheating scandal.
Mm-hmm.
And especially being tied to the Dodgers organization, where they were pretty much a victim of two straight World Series champions. Where they,
sure.
So how do you feel about the whole situation? Do you think the penalties were too weak or too strong? And do you think that if you were to the Astros broadcaster, would you be able to notice this stuff?
I don't know about that last. I don't know about the last question, whether or not I would have noticed or not. I find it hard to believe that certainly the people behind the seats for most of those home games didn't notice something. But again, you're kind of naive to something until you know about it and are told about it. So I think that's important to realize. But in terms of thoughts on the cheating scandal with the Dodgers, we had always got, I mean, the Astros internally, and this is kind of baseball stuff, like internal baseball stuff, but the Astros for years have been an organization that other organizations just don't deal with, don't communicate well with, refuse to work with, because baseball internally knew about these things for a long time, and it only blew up in baseball's face, in the Astros' face, because it was made public by Mike Fiers and Trevor Bauer and all these other guys, and which they're extremely courageous and heroic in the way that they told it to the public, because now we all know, otherwise the Astros could have done this for years, because I think other teams were afraid to go against Major League Baseball, who seemed to be in bed of sorts with the Astros. And I think we know that now based on the investigation that was done in not a fully transparent way. And the fact that the Astros have been the organization to lead the efforts of cutting minor league baseball in all of these cities, the Astros seemingly just don't. I don't think they have the best interest of baseball's popularity at large in their best interest, and for whatever reason Major League Baseball and Rob Manfred are taking the lead from them on a lot of these things. But at the same time, I'm not naive to think that not every organization is cheating in some way. I would never just flatly say, even working for a Dodgers affiliate, that the Dodgers are extremely clean. Mm-hmm. And that's not just me saying something because I'm close to the players and coaches and know how they operate on a daily basis, because I've never seen any reason to believe that they cheat. But I also am not naive to the fact that every organization, I'm sure, is doing something that is above or around the rules.
Who would you say is your biggest fan?
My biggest fan? Who am I the biggest fan of? Or
who is your biggest fan?
Who's my biggest fan?
Yeah.
I would say my dad, probably. I mean, he goes to bed at like 8 or 9 o'clock every day because he's an old man, but he's got a little Google smart device in his bedroom, and he has that thing on our radio station anytime I'm on the air. He's listened to, I mean, he falls asleep to Loons games every single night. Like, his in-season sleep sounds are my voice, whether that's good or bad that he falls asleep to me every night, but I think he's 100% my biggest fan, probably. I mean, my mom the same way, but yeah, my dad probably.
So you mentioned the rarity of this job. I mean, obviously, you probably consider yourself pretty lucky, but
yeah,
you ever step back and think about how lucky you really are?
Yeah, you have to a lot, because when the grind starts to hit in the baseball season, you start to question what you're doing here. That's for sure. And baseball in particular is the trickiest of all of them, because it's the longest schedule. It comes during a time of the year when it's actually nice in Michigan. You know, it'd be different if we were in some southern state where even when baseball season was over, you could still enjoy the weather somehow. Still go to the beach, still go to the lake, still enjoy everything that Michigan has to offer. But in Michigan in particular, like, once the baseball season's over, you're pretty much stuck in your house for 5 months, and then you're just getting ready for baseball season again. But it, obviously very lucky. Like, I used to drive past this ballpark when I was going on tours at CMU. I passed by it twice, and I was ignorant to the fact that there was minor league baseball here, so I thought it was Central Michigan's baseball stadium. Stupid, because it's 30 miles away from Mount Pleasant, but I saw the CMU banner in its center field, and I was like, oh, that must be CMU's baseball field. Really dumb. But I used to pass by it and be like, wow, that'd be really cool to call games from there one day. Mm-hmm. Like, not even knowing what was here. I would just, like, see the logos and be like, wow, they get to call whatever baseball they're calling there. That's just a big venue. That would be really cool. And then when I started to learn about it when I was a freshman working under Jared Sandler, because he was doing CMU women's games, it was like, wow, Jared Sandler, like, does an afternoon drive show, like, in the Great Lakes Bay region, and he does all those Loons games. And I came to a Loons game one time and was like, I would love to work here. This would be outstanding. And to be a full-timer here in the number two role, and then to take the number one spot last year, and to do every game here, specifically at home when we have good crowds here, it really sets in of just, like, putting the mic on and then talking to everyone who is listening, hopefully more than my dad, is certainly special to think about and doesn't get lost very often during the season.
When you're coming up, were you more interested in just the keeping the game in focus, talking, or did you like the technical side of things as well?
Of the broadcast?
Yeah.
So I was always driven by stats, super statistical thinker, I guess. And even to this day, like, I follow the sports where I have the most stats readily available to me, which I interpret basketball statistics really easily, so I follow basketball. And obviously Major League Baseball has a ton of advanced analytics and stats and metrics, so for me it's easy to follow. Those are the two sports I follow the most because of it. So my broadcast when I was younger truly focused on the statistics, and then realizing that that's not as interesting as a lot of these parts of the broadcast are. But foundation of any broadcast is getting the names right and getting the score out as much as possible. Everything after that is icing on top, is gravy. And for me, the primary focus after that is telling individual stories. What guys' parents do, what their hometown is like, what they miss about their hometown, you know, all the little things like that, where their favorite food spot is in Midland, what they're working on with their swing, who they learned a certain pitch grip from. That's all the super important stuff that makes the broadcast interesting and unique, in the fact that those are stories you're probably not getting anywhere else except for on the radio, because we're with them every day.
All right, and finally, what do you think is the best path for someone like me in high school to take in order to get into this industry and have a job similar to what you have, or really anywhere in the sports broadcasting industry?
Well, I'll give kind of like a snarky, frustrated answer to that, and it's just go to Syracuse or Arizona State. I didn't have that opportunity to do so, like, financially, or I don't think I was, as a person, ready to go out of state to college when I left high school. It just wasn't something I could have ever dreamt of, nor did I even realize that Syracuse or any of those other larger colleges that are great in journalism and broadcasting, Missouri, Northwestern, Arizona State, whatever it may be, even Ohio, Ball State, like some of those schools outside of the state of Michigan, were available. I'm going to stay in state for school. Central Michigan's easy to get into. Again, not being a great student when I left high school, was like, all right, I'll go to CMU and see what happens. And I had no idea what the path was at that point. I didn't even know there was minor league baseball in the state of Michigan. I was extremely ignorant to what the landscape was of how you succeed as a broadcaster, extremely. And what every broadcaster has ever said at every seminar, at every conference, at any conversation, is there is no path, and that's the great part about it. And I would argue that's not a great part. It'd be nice to know a path to get through.
Right.
Because that's what's frustrating for all of us. It's like, well, if there's no true path, how do we get there? And first of all, it's always just appreciating where you are in the moment every time. So, you know, the fact that you have even a voice at your school is something to be super happy and proud of, because most high school students that want to get into broadcasting don't have that at all. And then after that, if you go to a school that affords you the opportunity to broadcast anything, that's super lucky, super fortunate. and I guess long story short is baseball is the best way to get opportunities on the air. Number one thing is to get reps on the air, become comfortable with not only how to call a game, but comfortable hearing yourself on a daily basis and comfortable with showing up every day and talking for however many hours it is and doing it without being able to screw up. I mean, you can screw up, but what I'm saying is you can't, like you can in your driveway or just recording yourself to your video games, just stop when you want. Like, mm-hmm. this is something that you're buying into for 3 hours or whatever it may be, and getting better on a daily basis that way. And then from there, you know, there are summer college wood bat leagues, the Northwood leagues. Those leagues are all over the country. Baseball is a great avenue for that. Anytime a young broadcaster in college reaches out to me, I tell them, get a summer wood bat league job. Because one, it's a grind, and people in minor league baseball appreciate that you've been through that grind, because the majority of them have been through that grind, and they know how hard you had to work to do it. The biggest thing for me to get into baseball in particular, go to the baseball winter meetings every year. Those are, when I was a kid, obviously seen as something like only owners and GMs and presidents and managers go to and players and whatever. But, I mean, there are hundreds of people just like you that want to be broadcasters that go to the winter meetings just to sit there and talk to minor league baseball GMs to one day, maybe if they have a job opening, email them and say, hey, I talked to you 4 years ago at the winter meetings. Can I have a chance? Whatever it is. And then just meeting other broadcasters, and then you can connect with them. I started going when I was a sophomore in college, met a handful of broadcasters. Not a single one of us had a job. We were all students. Two of them went to Oregon. One went to Missouri. I went to Central Michigan. One was at Ball State. Another one was at East Stroudsburg in Pennsylvania. And another one went to Minnesota Mankato. Just all over the country, all over the map. And none of us had jobs, and 3 years later, we were all in affiliated baseball together, which was really cool. We all met there for the first time. We all helped each other along the way, listening to tape, helping facilitate relationships with people that we hadn't met yet. And then to finalize the question, I guess my path, you know, just get better every day here. This is such a good job financially, security-wise, year-round, calling multiple sports, that you know, I would really only leave for, say, a AAA job or a network affiliate freelance couple of gigs or a Division I college. But otherwise, like, this is really good in minor league baseball, even though it's single A. There really are no tiers of baseball jobs in the country. It's you either have a minor league job or you don't, and then you either have a AAA job or you don't. But AA through the rookie leagues, pretty much all the same thing. It's just, how comfortable are you in the situation? Is it a good city? Is it a good ballpark? Is it a good front office? Is it a good major league organization? Do you have a good radio affiliation? Do you have to play your own breaks? Like, things like that. Do you have producers that are paid that care about the product? All mm-hmm. of those things play into it. We have all of that stuff here, so it's really lucky.
All right, that's all I have for you.
All right.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, dude. We